we present the News Quiz with your host, Susan Kalman.
To the News Quiz. I'm Susan Kalman. Now, Sandy can't be here this week as she's got a play date in New Zealand. You know, I reckon, Corey, they only chose me because they didn't need to change the booster seat. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph read by Corey Caulfield.
A cinema in Exeter has had to cancel a screening of Noah because of flooding.
Our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Andrew Maxwell. And opposite them on my left, Tom Rigglesworth and Holly Walsh. Jeremy, which group of people is now Miller Lite?
Ah. This will be Her Majesty's Conservative Party. To be honest, she's stood down as a minister, but not as an MP, and I think Basingstoke deserves better. But you know, they don't have to live there. No one made them. But I don't really care, because it's not that egregious. Compared with the bedroom tax or the cuts to benefits and disability payments and things like that, you know, her accounting is a little bit strange, let's be honest. But she wasn't at the Treasury, so it's not that important. The apology was a bit perfunctory, but I thought, well, she apologised, and she didn't want to. It's like kids, don't make them say sorry when they're not sorry. It's like when a minister says something really offensive about, oh, everybody from the Midlands is scum, and then they're forced to go there and say, I didn't mean it, and they did. So don't make them apologise. Anyway, I mean, what's more egregious is the way that suddenly her fine got reduced. Now, one minute she was facing a life sentence for redesignating her cat as a personal assistant. And then suddenly she was, you know, having to give back one of the House of Commons biros that she'd taken. But, of course, the rising star is this lad...
Sajid Javid,
yeah. And they're all saying, oh, yes, he is the son of a Pakistani bus driver. And they always say that when somebody comes from, you know, a different background. Oh, yes, he's a former miner. Oh, she's some sort of woman. But they never say, yet another white male chinless pudding on a private income.
I don't know why people are obsessed with the fact that she only did a 33-second apology. Mm. Like, that was... Like, the Daily Mail really went on about that, and I just love the idea that they're timing everyone's apology. They've got a huge spreadsheet up of the longest apologies. I worked out that the song by Elton John, Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word, is exactly 3 minutes and 33 seconds. So, really, she would have been better off just singing that.
Or Candle in the Wind, which people like more.
She should have done an Elton John medley and then just left. That would have been the way to go.
I don't... I didn't see the apology, but, like, is that long or short?
Well, it's to be honest, it's quite short, I think.
Well, was it like, sorry?
Yeah,
that's it.
It's a culture secretary. I mean, what is that anyway?
They're in charge of bacteria.
What are you saying?
She used to be Minister for Ladies, didn't she?
Yeah.
Lady Manesses. Yeah.
I've heard they're called no-tails. Yeah. They've had to move the women away from the minorities issue because it turns out they're not the minority.
Yeah, because there's actually more women.
There's a big Venn diagram, essentially. Would you think, Holly, should there be more women in the cabinet?
No. I think it's a blessed relief that just white men look after this country. Because I don't know about you, but I've got so much crocheting to get on with.
I'm just glad someone's got the courage to come out and finally say it, Holly. It's, what all women have been thinking, but none of us have been brave enough to say what you've just said.
I'm going to say this. None of us have the balls to say
none of us have the balls to say that we're actually happy that there aren't as many women in government. Actually, I think there should be a ban on women in government.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? When people talk about the glass ceiling, I think I don't want to break that because Muggins here is going to be the one to clean it up. And...
Maria Miller resigned from the government after a week of headlines about her expenses. The Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards said that Mrs. Miller should repay £45,000 of wrongly claimed mortgage expenses. But a committee of MPs knocked it down to less than £6,000. I mean, that's a committee I'd like to buy a car from, quite frankly. Sajid Javid was announced as Mrs. Miller's replacement, and let's hope he pays as much attention to culture as she did. Eating a yoghurt should just about do it. 2 points to Jeremy. Andrew, who said, bully for you, it's an unfair cop.
Ah, now this is about bullying in the police force.
Well done, that's
no problem.
I'm glad we're all taking Maria Miller's apology as a way of playing the news quiz this evening.
It's the two fellas that had to resign because they were trying to reshape the police federation. Because they say that the federation is the trade union, and it's not. It's an arse-covering exercise. What it should be doing is trying to sort of improve the working conditions and pay of the police, which are execrable. Instead, they sort of say, been rude to a Tory, we'll cover your arse.
You know, on his way out, the man who was, said he was bullied, he said that the way he'd been treated was a straw that almost broke the camel's back. And you can't do that to Proverbs. You can't dilute Proverbs. They don't work. You can't say, oh, you know, too many cooks make the broth. You know, I mean, it's all right with a bit of bread, but it's a bit salty.
So this is about Steve Williams, who was the chair of the Police Federation, stepped down after complaining of being bullied by his colleagues.
A friend of mine was a policeman, and one thing he said to me that always stuck in my mind was he said, you go into the police thinking you're going to become this, you're going to help society, you're going to improve it, and actually what happens is you spend your entire life with the worst versions of human beings. Like, no one ever gets great news and calls the police. Like, you never go, well, look, someone's getting christened. Let's get a policeman down, you know. Like, the only time policemen ever turn up to something is if something has gone wrong or they're a stripper.
What I've always found confusing is when did policemen, you know, the strippers, we're talking about strippers, at what point did a policeman become sexy? Because, you know, I say that advert,
I think it's when they were issued with handcuffs.
Oh, is that, is it the handcuffs?
Right.
That advert on the television I see sometimes called Uniform Dating.
UniformDating.com.
Where it's really sinister. They go, do you like somebody in a uniform? And you don't need to be wearing a uniform yourself, you just have to really fancy people in uniform.
Nothing I like more than a dining lady's tabard.
You'd have to be really niche if you went to lollipop ladies.
Well, you'd have to be very old.
Why?
Young. My lollipop lady when I was a kid was lovely.
We didn't have lollipop ladies.
Aye, just fighting through the bracken. Just beating back the undergrowth with your broadsword. The school's somewhere here, kiddies. Come on.
Susan, now you know how supply teachers feel, don't you?
Yes. I'm a supply teacher. It feels somewhat like you all know your teacher and you all love your teacher, right? And everyone loves your teacher because Sandy is a brilliant teacher, but Sandy's had to go away. And I've come in all like, hey, everyone, hey, we're all going to have really good fun, aren't we? I'm just like Sandy, except I'm not Danish, I'm Scottish, but I'm exactly the same as Sandy. I'm just cheaper. And what's happening? And everyone's gone, oh, here she is.
Sandy lets us watch a DVD. She doesn't make us do the show. She lets us watch a DVD and she gives us fish fingers with beans.
It's exactly like that, apart from you've got 300 Ofsted inspectors in the room.
Steve Williams, the chair of the Police Federation, is stepping down from the organisation after complaining about being bullied by senior colleagues. He said he was retiring to allow a new chair to take the organisation into a new phase, the phase in which you get your head flushed down the toilet. He explained his problems to the Joint Central Committee. The Joint Central Committee recently won the award for the UK's least usefully named public body, fighting off bids from the Department of Stuff and the Thingamy Commission. 2 points to Andrew. Tom, have a listen to this. Tom, why are the drugs not such a good deal?
Yes, Tamiflu has been... which is annoying because we've spent £500 million or something like that on stockpiling a load of it. So, I feel really sorry for the next edition of Question Time when some junior MP is going to have to sit there and go, oh, do you know, we've saved loads of money closing hospitals and libraries and everything, but we've bought loads of Smarties. But it's good in a way because it's really pushing toward transparency in the whole medical research and medical reports and everything like that. So even though everyone's up in arms about it, the bigger picture is it's actually we're getting closer to the truth behind medical research and how big pharmaceutical companies can govern academics and sway them and one thing or another. So all in all, it's great news. And the people who will probably most benefit from this sort of thing really are people who practice homeopathic medicines because, I mean, it turns out after all that a lot of flu can be cured with a gargle of vinegar.
The government essentially stockpiled Tamiflu, and then a report came out saying it's possibly not that effective. And it's a bit frightening because if we can't trust drugs companies, really, who can we trust?
Well, they've got £500 million worth of Tamiflu now knocking around. I mean, what are they going to do with all those tablets? I've got two words: beanbags.
She sounds like a country singer, I think. Ladies and gentlemen, the grand old Hutley welcomes Tamiflu vaccine. I can't get flu because I've had the flu jab. Because when you get to 50, what happens is you suddenly get a call from the GP practice and they invite you in. And if you're a 50-year-old man, the doctor says, right, here's what we've got for you, right? Either the nurse can give you a flu jab or I can stick my finger up your bum. And I say, well, how about the nurse? No, that's not on offer. That's not on the offer. It's one or the other. No blending of the two concepts. But actually, to be honest, he stuck his finger up my bum as well. But that's because I wasn't quick enough getting to the...
I have my flu jab every... I'm not a 50-year-old man.
How did you get a flu jab, then?
I pay for it. So that I don't take up valuable resources from the NHS by getting flu later on. I pay for it. And you get advantage points at Boots as well. So then I can buy a sandwich. So essentially it's a day out. According to the Cochrane Collaboration, the government wasted £500 million stockpiling anti-flu drugs that have not been proven to work. The drugs were stockpiled at the height of the swine flu panic, back before we found out what the real devastating epidemic was going to be. One Direction. The drugs in question were Tamiflu and Relenza, which is coincidentally what Gwyneth and Chrissy's next two children were going to be called. 2 points to Tom. Holly, which Limerick-born head of state knew that he couldn't be late for a meal with the Queen in a jumped-up canteen? And who was his questionable date?
I think this is a lovely story. This is a story of how Michael D. Higgins, is he the president?
He is Uachtaráin na hÉireann. Yes, he's the president of Ireland.
The president of Ireland came over to London for a 4-day visit, a.k.a. a city break. They went to visit the Queen. They had this incredible banquet. I like the fact that the Queen, she went over to Ireland 3 years ago, and everybody said that was an incredible tour. I've actually got the tour T-shirt. It's got the dates on the back. It sounded awesome. The good thing about it is it's taken 3 years for her to invite him back, which really lets me off the hook because there's loads of people I owe dinner parties to. And so he came over and they held a huge banquet at Windsor, and the Queen did a really cool speech where she just sort of talked about how Ireland and Britain were neighbours and friends. And for a minute, I thought she was going to sing the Neighbours theme tune.
I've met the president.
What's he like?
He's an absolute cracker. He's 4 foot. I'm not joking you.
Like,
is that a
precise measurement?
I'm telling you, I'm not the tallest man in the world. He was up to me nipples. Like, he's tiny. And he's a lovely fella, but the first time you meet him, it's quite scary, Jeremy, because at first you think he's far away. it's only when you feel his breath on your arm, you're like, ah! He's on me!
But he's an incredibly erudite man of letters, and yet he's this funny, tiny man with a very shrill voice. And Prince Philip, you must have just been thinking, well, unless he grants me 3 wishes, I'm not interested.
He's also a man who does not suit formal attire. He looks adorable in a tuxedo. He looks like, you know when you see page boys at people's weddings who are in sort of clothes that really aren't... I mean, I just want to see him in a sailor suit. He's so sweet.
He's a lovely little president. I got to meet him at a very formal, like the full monkey suit, you know. You know the way you can't meet the Queen in the toilet? You know that, right? She gets her own toilet everywhere she goes.
You know? Oh, I thought you meant you can't arrange for a...
Yes, I know.
Well, that's not how it is in Ireland. It's a more small and informal place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a pee beside the president. And this voice just came to me and just went, "Hey, have you ever seen the president's willy?" And I said, "No." And the little voice went, "Come on, this is our chance." It was me, him, and his plainclothes special branch bodyguard in this tiny toilet. And I did it like, it wasn't even subtle. I went for it like that. And from behind me, the special branch cop just went, "Eyes ahead."
One of my favourite details about when he came over, he went to see the Irish Guard and they've got a mascot. The Irish Guard have got an Irish wolfhound. Mm-hmm.
Biggest dog you can get.
Biggest dog you can get, and he bought it a bright red coat, which is adorable. But this mascot, this little dog, or big dog, its name is Donald of Shantamon. That's his name, Donald of Shantamon. Now, if there's one thing I love more than a dog in a red coat, it's a dog in a red coat with a surname.
Mm-hmm. Full name.
Yeah.
They're a big dog.
Yeah, I know.
The president can ride them.
Yeah. This week, a banquet was held in Windsor Castle in honour of the President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, to mark the first state visit to the UK by an Irish head of state. The banquet marks the first visit since the disbanding of a certain maligned and dangerous group. I mean, personally, I always liked Westlife. Ireland has a president and a prime minister, just like the UK did during the days of Tony Blair and George W. Bush. On Tuesday at the state banquet, Michael D. Higgins said that he hoped the visits would become regular occasions. Then the following day, he was shown around by the Duke of York and quickly changed his mind. 2 points to Holly. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Andrew have 5 points and Tom and Holly have 4 points. We start round two with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
In order to improve its finances, a maternity hospital is offering breast enlargements on the side.
Thanks to everyone that sent us that. Now, Jeremy, why does your heart bleed for someone who has been hacked off?
Oh, this is the thing where we all have to change our passwords if we can be bothered. It's a very complicated thing that we may or may not need to change our passwords. Not for our tree houses, not for things like that. I mean, you know, passwords for internet access.
So our safety words are still OK?
Yeah.
The safety words are still OK. You can keep your mother's maiden name.
You don't have
to get your mother, if she's still alive, to change her maiden name by deed poll. But your very special word, like password four, or Susan C... Mm-hmm. 1971 or something. Those things.
I'm slightly younger than that, Jeremy.
I find it quite reassuring that someone might know my passwords because I've no idea.
I had a temp job once and I had to go to the guy who's like head of IT, and they had to sort of guide you through to get a temporary login. So he was sort of entering all the information and he goes, "Fine." And I mean, it was the worst job ever. And this guy was, "All right, I'm going to need a password." So as a joke, I said, "I hate my job." And he typed it into the system and then went, "That password's already taken." I'm like, "I'm in it for the money." He said, "No, that's mine." Eventually we decided on, "I have made some bad decisions in life that resulted in an unsatisfactory temp job, too."
I made a radio show about online security and I left... after having met spies and spooks and geeks and nerds and stuff and still being completely none the wiser. The only thing that I took from it is, does anybody here have any blue tack? Yeah? Do you have blue tack in your house? Yeah. Every time you open the laptop, put some blue tack over the lens.
That's true.
Yeah, because hackers can hack in and start recording you in the nip.
I always put a post-it note over it.
"You can blue tack over your lens, but God will see your abominations."
That's genuinely terrifying, Jeremy.
It could be the NSA. That's a theory that America Land is spying on. They inserted it, you know, like as a, in a paranoid conspiracy theory way. They actually did do that. So as part of their spying exercise. That is one of the theories.
That America is...
America doesn't exist. They mocked it up in a Hollywood studio. And it's all actors. They're all actors. If you think about all the famous Americans, you know, John Wayne, Demi Moore, think about it. They're all actors. The whole country is actors. It's not a real place. There is no moon landing. Yeah, there is no moon. It's all been... Kennedy's fine.
What's confused everybody, though, is that they said, oh, you should change your passwords, and then the next day went, oh, no, don't. Don't, not now, not now, they'll know. And so if you change it now, you might be giving away more details than you otherwise might. So now everyone's got themselves whipped up into a white lather of uncertainty.
Yeah.
No, maybe it is. Maybe internet banking inside every computer is a little bank with tiny sort of Michael D. Higgins and Susan Kalman-sized tellers working away, moving the money around. They actually physically take your money in coins and take it from one account to another. And there's a little piggy bank in there and a little safe.
My computer's so new that it was a little bank in there, but it's a fancy bar now.
Tech firms and security advisors are urging people to change their passwords after the discovery of a major flaw. The Heartbleed bug is a vulnerability in the OpenSSL cryptographic software library. Many Microsoft services have remained unaffected as they've got locks on the Windows. It is one of the most serious security flaws ever found, up there with the keys under the mat, and the Al-Qaeda terror files are on the 815 from Paddington. 2 points to Jeremy. Tom, why can you take a runner to Sheffield, but you can't make them drink?
It's the wonderful story that the Sheffield Marathon, well, half marathon, was cancelled on the day of the event because they didn't have any water. They didn't turn up. I don't know where it was coming from or anything, and everyone had taps. Like, it wasn't a big problem. They had water anyway. It was already there and stuff. They weren't... Like, people from Sheffield aren't backward. I'm assure you of that. I think... I mean, it's lovely, though, because I was quite proud to be from Sheffield for this story because people just came out of the houses giving them water, wondering what the fuss was. So I thought that was quite sweet. A lot of people actually finished the race and went home and heard on the radio that it had been cancelled. Such is the belligerence, I'll just carry on, doesn't matter, does it? I mean, I think a lot of people just thought, well, it's only a half marathon. You don't need any water for a half marathon. I think a lot of the runners did the run before breakfast. They're so hard in Sheffield.
I like the idea that there's probably about four or five runners who are just listening to this show going, what? It didn't count.
But wouldn't you just... What a great opportunity not to have to do it. Because apparently the ones who are doing it... Well, people always say, oh, I'm doing it for charity. And you think, yeah, no, you're not. Go around the pub with a bucket and raise the money that way. You're doing it to show off because you can go on Facebook. I ran a really long way. But I set myself a personal challenge and I met that personal challenge. But... Not to in any way dismiss them, but you think you're standing there and someone says, "I'm sorry, there's trouble with water. There's no water. You'll have to go home." You just go, "Oh, thank God for that."
Over 4,000 runners were left disappointed when the Sheffield Half Marathon was called off due to a problem with the delivery of water, something that wasn't a problem at the Somerset Half Marathon. South Yorkshire Police said it initially tried to set up roadblocks, but later decided it was safer to let them complete the run because marathon hurdles isn't a thing. 2 points to Tom. Polly, why was there a red threat in a green woggle?
This is this really weird story about how MI5 spied on the scouts during the 1920s because they thought they were a communist threat. It's just the most bizarre story. They thought that communists were trying to infiltrate the scout movement and that everything was going to go a bit red in that direction because of what was happening. And I just find this amazing. This is honestly true. I was in the scouts till I was 15 because A, we didn't have a guide troop near where I lived, and B, no boys would come near me otherwise. And
oh,
that's yes, all right. And I was in the scouts. The idea that something this thrilling could happen in the scouts, that some commies could come in and try and brainwash us. The most exciting thing that happened to me when I was in the scouts was when a fox pissed on our bivouac. So I am so envious that
were
this
you outside
happened.
At the time, or did it come in? Was it an urban fox?
You know what a bivouac is, right?
Yeah. What's do I not look like the kind of lady that goes bivouacking?
Bivouac sounds really intimidating in a Glaswegian accent. That's terrible.
If you say let's go bivouacking, you say it.
Let's go bivouacking.
I'll do it now.
Let's go bivouacking. There was the Woodies, the Woodcraft folk were set up by the Communist Party because the Scouts look more proto-fascist. And you think, because Mussolini came to power in the early 20s, you'd think it would have been more... Because they do look like a sort of extreme right-wing... Very practical extreme right wing.
It was very edgy in the interwar years, you know. There was the rise of fascism, the rise of communism in the UK. You know, it overthrew basically all the nascent democracies, the Weimar Republic in central, you know, Germany. And in Britain, they just built Neasden. That's what it was. That was genuinely the thing that took the edge off extreme politics in the UK. Was they built Metroland, northwest London. That's history, people.
I think it would be awful to be a communism in the Scouts. It'd be like, one person gets a badge, everyone gets a badge. That completely undermines the whole badge system. I don't know how the communists thought they were going to infiltrate the Scouts, though, because if you look at a lineup of boys and one of them is a middle-aged man called Igor, you know, it's like, spot the communist.
Newly published files from the National Archives show how MI5 tackled apparent attempts by communists to infiltrate the Boy Scouts. The head of MI5 first became suspicious when his son came home from the Scouts with his new redistribution of wealth badge. Another name that appears in the papers is Arthur Ransom, who was suspected of being a spy as his wife was Trotsky's personal secretary, and the fact that his third book was called Swallows, Amazons and Capitalist Pig Dogs. The men in charge were always paranoid about communists turning up in positions of influence like they are today with women. 2 points to Holly. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
Well, Susan. This was sent in by Les Telford. It's from the Westmorland Gazette and it says, a lorry shed some of its load of washing-up liquid on the M6 after a collision with a Land Rover in the early hours of this morning. No injuries were sustained, but two lanes were closed while the clean-up operation took place.
Andrew?
This is from Mia Mannion in Jersey. This is the BBC Good Food magazine. A Thermomix, an all-in-one food processor, is great, as it acts as a second commie chef, one that can steam veg, make custard and cook hollandaise. It's ideal for new babies as well.
Holly.
This was sent in by Christopher Rogers and it's from the Telegraph's online gallery. It says, Kate watched on protectively, occasionally wiping some dribble from his chin as William chatted to some of the other parents.
And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Andrew have 13 points, but tonight's winners with 14 points, it's Tom and Holly. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Northampton Chronicle, sent in by Jing Cheng.
Police are trying to identify a woman who's been pictured urinating in Abingdon Street. A police spokeswoman said officers were trying to get to the bottom of the matter.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Andrew Maxwell, Tom Wigglesworth and Holly Walsh. In the chair was Susan Kalman and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, Gareth Gwynne and James Sherwood, with additional material by Steve Bougier, James Bagg and Bronya Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.